Welcome to MGO Hockey Cast 1.10. If you've stuck with us this far, you might as well go one more. We'll even give you a bonus overall college hockey segment at the end.
So, David.
Yes, Anthony.
It's over. A lot of things are over. Just this hockey season.
It is. Is that a good thing?
No, hockey being over is never good.
No, I know. And you know, one of the things with that was I was looking through college hockey news to do some prep for this, and I started seeing like the scores of like the conference tournaments and just like the articles of projecting who's going to do what. And I was really bummed because how many years have we been used to Michigan like... Well, not only like making the NCAA tournament and making runs, but also advancing through the conference tournament. Mm-hmm. And so then part of that fun is kind of like what's going to happen in basketball this weekend is like you get caught up in like all the different tournaments.
Right.
And where does it shake out? Mm-hmm. What does the RPI or the pairwise look like? Who do we need to root to win between like Harvard and Clarkson? You know, those types of things that are just kind of that, you know, we ignore that for most of the year. But now we get obsessive over these, you know, small sample size games for a weekend or two, and now they're not really relevant.
I did appreciate you and the rooting guide and your enthusiasm.
Did you? I thought those were fun.
Yeah, I've never really been into the rest of college hockey,
okay.
So to speak.
So you're just kind of like, right. For me, not sure like, what I'm talking about.
No,
here.
I am sure I know what you're talking about because I know what it's like to follow a sport.
Sure,
but yeah, it's. It is a little bit different. They've ended their season earlier than most years.
Yeah, I don't remember the last... Well, 2 years ago. But, I mean, that team you knew was
Did you know this dead. Is the second worst season in, like, 30 years?
Well, I know what the worst one was.
2 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then before that, it was... Because they missed the tournament two of the previous 3 years before that bad Kyle year.
Right.
And I don't mean to blame Alex Kyle, but he was kind of like... The one senior guy on that team. Yeah, I mean, he was a player on that team. But anyway, but even those first couple of years they missed the tournament, like it came down to the end.
Right.
Like they made the conference final against Notre Dame the first year they missed it. Then the second year, like they lost in like this ridiculous multiple overtime game against Penn State that they just needed like one more win.
Uh-huh. Right.
And then
Penn State was really bad at the time.
Right.
Yeah.
And Michigan just couldn't get a goal. I think it literally was 1-0 the final.
Yeah.
And then the Hyman year when the Hyman-Larkin year, I should say, when they had that fun line, went really late because they kept winning in the conference tournament.
Didn't they lose to Notre Dame in the final?
No, they lost to Minnesota.
Oh,
but they had a two-goal lead and ended up losing like 4-2.
I remember, this is kind of harkening on better times, I would say, but do you remember when it was like a disaster for them to have to win to get into the tournament? Like that one year where they had to win at State?
It was only 1 year.
Yeah.
It was the Hunwick year.
So that was the only 1 year.
No, I mean, there might have been...
They lost in Fort Wayne, right?
Yeah. But they were a 7 seed.
Yeah.
And then they went to Western, and then they went to State, mm-hmm. and then they beat that really good Miami team in the semifinals, and they drew, like, Northern in the finals and like, pulled it out 2-1.
Just looked that up the other day for some reason.
And it was... Yeah, and it was Hunwick, because those were, like, his first, like, 7 games playing or something like that.
Yep.
And they were just... It was... That was... That up until like they lost in overtime to Miami after they had a goal waved off was one of the more fun runs of Michigan hockey.
Oh, yeah, it was
terrific.
Yeah.
They weren't the best team by any means.
They were playing really well.
But they were really fun to follow, and they're getting probably a little puck luck and stuff.
Right.
But
we did not feel that way about this team. We did not necessarily feel like they were going to go on a run.
No. I always kind of thought it was there because of the rest of the Big Ten.
Yes.
And I looked at the rest of the Big Ten, I thought, okay, there's no one that I don't think Michigan can play with.
The cream could rise to the mediocre top.
Everyone could settle in the middle.
Right.
And then it's pulling names out of a hat.
Yes.
And, you know, and it even plays out because what? They lost like 4 of their last 5 games in overtime.
Yeah.
So it's not like they were getting run out of most games. And we talked about this in prep. I think they got blown out of like, 4 or 5 games this year, and they blew about 3 or 4 teams out.
Yeah, every game was pretty tight.
And then, like, but the remaining, like, 28 were all essentially 50-50 games.
You know who else plays a lot of close games?
Teams that barely missed the playoffs?
The Red Wings.
But the Red Wings are, like...
I mean, before this year.
Okay, because I was going to say, the Red Wings are, you know, I don't... not going to hate on your team because they are still your team, or have you transitioned?
I don't know.
You don't know. I remember.
I'm so indifferent.
I remember a few years
I'm
on
totally
Twitter.
Indifferent.
You were so mad at the Wings, and I mean, you're one of my favorite people, but you're one of my favorite sports people, and you're definitely probably my favorite hockey person. And you were just so upset that I made a Twitter poll that said, who should Anthony's
team be? Oh, yeah. Did
the
Vegas Golden Knights win?
No, because they weren't a team then.
You said Vegas something.
No, I said my two favorite teams that I've followed uh-huh. in the last 30 years, the Islanders and the Avalanche. Uh-huh. And then I said BU because they had like a bunch of picks.
Uh-huh.
So they were essentially a professional team. And then I think I said that you should just give all that up and follow the KHL. And the KHL, I think, won.
So you could see the writing on the wall with the Red Wings. You could see the decline with the way the moves were being made. And I just had a long conversation about this with somebody the other day. But it was a long and sad decline. Now, let me ask you something.
Okay.
What writing on the wall do you see here? Do you see good? Do you see bad?
Well, I mean, we're going to get into some of this in the second part because we're going to kind of go through the different areas of the team. And there's a couple of bright spots, I think. Right. But there are some things that I would have liked fixed this year. We talked about it. I mean, they're not secrets. We've talked about this in the past. And there could be different reasons. Mm-hmm. But some of it is not as cheery or positive as maybe we came to last year.
Right.
Because, well, I mean,
are we teasing the second segment? Now people have to listen to my ad read if they want to hear.
Dude, it's. I mean, we should use that in the regular podcast just because.
I don't know why you don't.
That's a good
point. I don't make those decisions.
No, that's a bit
Tell
above
Seth,
our pay grade.
Let's go.
Should we talk about the games?
Let's talk about the games.
Since our intro went like six plus minutes.
So, Minnesota. They went to Minnesota and played a series, and it did not go very well. Lost both games. The first one, Michigan got off to a 2-0 lead.
Yeah, the Friday night game.
Really well on Friday night in the first period. They had the first five shots.
Yes.
And it was becoming apparent to me as the period wore on that Michigan was probably going to dominate possession as we discussed. But
right, because we said going into this, is it going to be an even strength series or is it going to be a special team series?
Right, and Michigan had like 65% of the possession in the season series. And so as the game wore on, you could see that Minnesota was trying to counterattack. And at first they weren't necessarily getting the odd man rushes or like really effective, but you could see they were executing pretty well.
In transition.
It was becoming a little bit of a concern because it was apparent that that's what they were trying to do.
Right.
And Michigan is kind of bad at defending that.
So Michigan would get the puck and they would get it into their offensive zone.
And they
would keep it.
Yeah, playing defense by having the puck.
But when they'd lose it, what you're saying is Minnesota would transition them back and Michigan was not always prepared for that.
Launching a counterattack. I mean, they didn't really have anything breakthrough in the first period.
No.
Michigan actually got the goal in the first, so they got a goal off of like two funny bounces.
Would you call that a Glenn Denning goal?
Yeah, he's made millions of dollars doing that.
He has.
Right.
So, but that doesn't mean that he can't be associated with it.
Puck went off two different Minnesota defensemen.
Yes,
like a centering or a shot. And yeah, those are the bounces you get when you're dominating and when you're playing the right way. And, you know, Michigan made that happen, so credit to them. And they, you know, went into the first intermission 1-0.
Yeah, I think it was Mike Pasta.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was pretty good.
Yep. And then in the second, they actually doubled their lead.
Mm-hmm.
As I think Becker had a shot from, it was the edge of the house, just inside the blue line, and he ripped one. It goes wide, but deadens sort of behind, and then Lockwood skates sort of towards the front of the net, and I think it was Nick Pasta that kind of back flipped it up over somebody, but it was right out in front, and Robson couldn't really get it, and Lockwood just beat him short side quickly.
It was kind of a little bit of a Minnesota breakdown defensively.
The guy
got caught flat-footed defending, but Michigan made three really good plays on that.
Yeah, but I mean, if Will Lockwood's on the ice and he comes flying through the slot, somebody's got to be near him. He's the guy of the forwards that if you're Minnesota, you have to check this guy.
Definitely. And then Sheehy gets Minnesota on the board on a 3-on-2 on a backhand as he's able to drag it across a crease on man.
Right.
Where Raby doesn't get the back check the right way. And so
yeah, he doesn't follow.
Right. And so that allows Sheehy to drag across the crease on a tough play, and he beats Mann. And, you know, Mann was playing actually pretty well. I thought Mann was player of the game for Michigan.
Yeah.
And that got Minnesota within one going into the third.
And it was a little frustrating to me because I thought that through the first two periods, Michigan controlled play and got what they wanted out of this game.
Yes.
The problem was is that the way they scored their goals were not really repeatable.
Right.
And after, like, the fluky first one, and then the second one was a bit of a Minnesota breakdown, I was thinking, you know, they're probably going to have to hold on to this because you can get a goal at any time, I guess, in hockey, as randomness will allow. But how is Michigan going to manufacture this? I wasn't feeling super confident because while they were creating some chances, like, Robson played great. And we came into this series thinking there's an argument for him being the best goalie in the Big Ten.
Oh, yeah.
And he played really well. I mean, Mann played well, too, and I'm not taking that away from him. But Robson pretty much stopped anything that Michigan put on net.
So I would think Minnesota, if I had to, like, TLDR it.
Okay. So this, we're in the internet age.
If I had to give it a hot take.
Okay.
Minnesota is going to make you earn your goals. They're not going to give you a whole lot of great chances. And Robson's going to not give you a goal. And then they're going to counterattack when you start pressing a little bit, or if you're not sharp on the back end, in this series at least. You know, that was their plan, and that was how they executed it. And Michigan, as you're saying, like, they got two of their goals on kind of flukish type things that aren't super repeatable. Although, you know, because they were working hard, they got the luck, they got the bounces.
Sure.
And Minnesota, as you could see, the game went on. They were starting to get their odd man rushes slowly, and they're executing pretty well in transition, and they looked really dangerous in the third period in transition, like extremely dangerous.
Well, this is another bit of a teaser, but, like, it's ironic because that's sort of what you and I have been saying that Michigan should probably have done more of in this past couple months.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what we expected out of this season.
Or hoped for.
Right, given where their talent level sat. And honestly, Minnesota's sitting a little bit lower than Michigan in the talent department. I think they had a little bit... They're a little bit older, I think the same amount of experience, if I'm not mistaken, but they don't have the high-end skill, whereas Michigan had a couple players with high-end skill.
Yep. And because, I mean, they lost Mittelstadt. And they had a couple really young guys.
Right.
But they didn't really come along until later.
So Minnesota ties the game in the third on a two-on-one where Blankenberg got caught flat-footed.
Yeah, he just got beat, I thought. The guy it was essentially a skate race from the opposing blue line, or the Minnesota blue line. And I thought Minnesota executed that probably at about a 99%. Like, everything, they did exactly what you want to do on that, including the pass and the shot, and everything went how you'd want it to.
Yeah, and that was a good play on them. Force overtime, and in overtime, Minnesota capitalized. I thought it was a pretty even overtime. Michigan had a couple chances. Minnesota had a couple chances. And the irony of the overtime
they had
goal,
that 2-on-0.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, Raby, they get in on a shorthanded, and Van Wy digs the puck off of the boards and slings it over to Raby, who's sitting in front of the crease. And it was tough because I think it was in his skates, because Van Wy could not take time. He just had to whip the puck there. So it wasn't the best pass ever, but Raby found a way to get it on net, which I thought was impressive. And, of course, Robson made the save because he had been all night.
Yeah, he's been great. And Minnesota's goal honestly felt a lot like a Quinn Hughes goal, where there's a big long cycle and a big long perimeter circle, which is what Quinn Hughes does really well.
Yes.
And there was a nice, pulling people out of place a little bit. And they didn't pass off their, Michigan didn't pass off their players as they're defending, as the puck's going around in a circle. And I think Blankenberg lost somebody, and Minnesota was able to get a good clean shot off of a cycle, and that was the game.
And that, to me, is, we talk a little bit about, and we'll talk a little bit later more about some penalty kill breakdowns, but sometimes there are just plays made by the offense. Sometimes you can play really good defense in football, and Tom Brady hits a guy in the hands, and what are you going to do?
Right.
And I think that pass to me was a little bit more of, this is a guy that, on a power play that makes a really nice play, hits a great pass, and you don't want to give that up, and there's a way that you could have executed to potentially stop it. But it's a high-level play.
Yeah, it was a great play by Minnesota.
So,
right.
Sometimes that happens.
It was such a high play that I compared it to something Quinn Hughes did.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think my biggest takeaways from the game were Minnesota defended the middle very strong. So they made, made Michigan earn it. They were built off their transition, and they won that game in transition more than special teams, honestly, even though Michigan couldn't. Michigan was 0-for-4. Minnesota was still 1-for-6.
Right.
So Michigan did their job until that overtime.
Right.
I think 5-on-5 play was pretty even. Like, Michigan was totally fine 5-on-5. except for the, you know, transition opportunities they were allowing.
Right.
I think that pretty much evened up scoring chances with the transition opportunities. And then I thought both goalies were great. So I thought Mann was player of the game, and Robson was also very strong.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that that was Michigan's best goaltending. I mean, you could even argue on the weekend, but that particularly Friday night in quite some time. I mean, there might have been a game like maybe that one of the Notre Dame games or the Ohio State game that LaVine played really, really well. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, Mann showed us something that is at least there's slight positive right. in that department going into next year. Uh-huh. Like, we'll get into talking about it later, but, you know, the goaltending obviously hasn't been the best. No. There's been other issues.
Right.
But the goaltending could obviously be improved. Mm-hmm. And after last weekend where Mann didn't have the greatest weekend and LaVine came in and also didn't have a great game, they did get a response performance that was positive, I guess.
Oh, yeah. They had great goaltending this weekend.
Yeah.
I mean, last weekend, it was one period out of six where they had really good goaltending, and that was the third period in the Friday game.
Yep.
This period, they had good goaltending in every period, I thought. Mann was really good.
Yeah. No, I agree with that.
I think he was a player of the weekend for Michigan.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, when you only get three goals, it's tough to right. give it to an offensive player. But I will say that they probably took too many penalties. Six is too many for the penalty kill that they have.
Right.
And you know Minnesota's good on special teams, especially on the power play.
Right.
And you can't give them that many opportunities. Mm-hmm. And it finally bit them in the end.
I would agree, yeah.
Anything else that you had from the
not
Friday game?
The first game, no.
That was pretty much it.
Yeah.
Saturday game, I don't know how long this is going to take because
Michigan wasn't in it very long.
No, probably less than the time of this segment, but they gave up goals quickly. Mm-hmm. Surprisingly, it was not in transition. I think I had them for one mm-hmm. odd man rush,
right.
and it was late, and I think Mann saved it.
Yeah, the first goal was Hughes getting caught a little, I think. He was hurt. So first of all, we find out a little bit before the game that Quinn is hurt. He might not play.
Right.
They don't dress Randall, so they can dress Gingell, so they can still have six defensemen if he can't play a whole lot.
Sure.
And he is going to tough it out, which is great.
Yeah.
But I think in reality, you could see he was very hobbled. So he had blocked a shot off of a foot or maybe an ankle or something, and he was just not quick. And going into the first goal was, I think, not being adjusted to a lack of foot speed or, you know, being a little bit hobbled. And
used to being able to use his speed to make up.
Yep, and the puck gets by. Moyle actually was back-checking really hard, made a nice effort, but the Novak is able to pull the puck across the crease and tuck it in
yep.
on a pretty nice play. And that's 5 minutes into the game, so it's a bad start.
Yep.
And it only kind of snowballed from there because I got two more goals in the next 10 minutes.
Yep, and both of them were also not great in the zone, I don't think. It,
right.
Like I said, it wasn't in the transition. One of them, I think you mentioned, was poor gap control. And
terrible. My note says terrible.
Terrible?
T-R-B-L.
You had
Charles Barkley.
Full Barkley in this segment. So at 3-0, like, we were watching this together, and it was just, I didn't think they were coming back. Like, you hope.
No.
And, you know, I know that, you know, Nate Wells, if you're out there listening, God bless you. But I've sat next to him a ton in the last few years, and his thing will say a 3-goal lead against Michigan is the worst lead because he's watched them blow
right.
3, 4,
it's happened,
five
yeah.
times
uh-huh.
to Minnesota. Not
right.
just to any team, but in right. a Michigan-Minnesota mm-hmm. game. But this one felt different to mm-hmm. me. I did not think that. The way that Robson played Friday night, mm-hmm. the way that Michigan started the game, the way that they can kind of be an emotional head case from time to time
right.
as a team,
yep.
I just thought, you know, and with Hughes injured, like, if you remember when they made that comeback in Minneapolis when they were down 3-0, Hughes was a huge part of that.
Mm-hmm.
He had a goal, he had an yep. assist, and he kind of just, you could see him just pop off the screen.
Yep.
And there's the Quinn Hughes that sometimes appears to care more than other times, mm-hmm. and when you see him engage that NHL mode,
mm-hmm.
you can tell.
Yeah,
and he hit that
he
the
did
last
the
time.
The last time they were in Minneapolis,
I don't yep. think that he was going to be capable of that
no,
with the injury.
No, no,
and
so they were. It was tough sledding from there. And I honestly, it seemed like they folded up shop a little bit. They gave up 3 goals. They didn't have a good shift until that last shift of the first period with the 90s line.
Yeah.
Had a couple good chances. And Mel was pretty candid on the interview between periods.
He went right to the defense.
Yeah.
It was
pretty
poor.
Yeah, it was pretty poor. And he said they didn't have a good shift all period till the end, which is basically what my notes say also.
Yep.
And it's a big hole to crawl out of when your best player is really hobbled. You're already down 1-0 in a series. And
when you've lost your last four games in overtime,
yeah,
it's a huge mental block to overcome because you think we can play well for 55 minutes, 58 minutes,
right,
but we still can't get a win. Mm-hmm. And like, even if you take it to a 50-50 situation, right, in overtime and still come up with tails every one of those times.
I will, you know, just, if you're going to overtime that often, you're usually not playing well for 55 minutes.
Well, what I mean is a couple of those games, they had a lead.
Right.
And they weren't in danger of necessarily losing.
Right.
They were out playing a team or playing it as well at, or better.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just have a breakdown or two. So overcoming that is a big thing, and it takes a lot of mental fortitude that I haven't seen a ton from this team this year.
Yeah, it was unfortunate. Should we finish this game real quick? We got to make it quick, though.
We can always...
Well, because the game was over, we have to be as fast as the game was. That's what you said. So second period, there's a power play goal, which is kind of bad coverage.
So this
is one-timer.
And this is kind of something we talk about, is that, you know, you mentioned this when we were rewatching it, because we rewatch a lot of the goals Michigan gives up. And
I have a habit when I'm watching a game, I rewind to the zone entry and watch the goals from there.
I mean, I think that is a great way to learn about what happened on the ice. Mm-hmm. So you want to walk us through it?
It was a pass across on the power play, and the high man of, I think the two high people were Raby
and
Van
Wy. And Van Wy was on the right.
Van Wy rotates down, and Raby doesn't stay high, and he sags a little into, like, underneath the hash mark, and the pass can get across.
Yeah, he crosses from the left side to the right side.
Right.
He's a complete. You can see that his skates are completely out of the slot on the wrong side.
So, yeah, he's really deep. They look like they're defending a 5-on-3 rather than a 5-on-4.
Yep.
A pass comes across, and it's just a one-timer that gets ripped, and Man is sliding over, and, you know, like, those kind of things, you're just hoping to get in the way.
Right.
And Man does not get in the way.
And sometimes, like, we've seen Michigan have those saved on them,
mm-hmm.
and you can see a goalie will see that ahead of time and just anticipate it.
Uh-huh.
But this one was fast, and the shot was, the pass was not like a dragger.
Yeah, it was bang, bang. You know?
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Those
and
are the
I think
shots.
And I think that Man was there. He just missed the puck as you're going from side to side.
It came back across,
right? And that's
side came
and
those
that's
are
just,
goals.
But that's just a good shot.
It was a great play by Minnesota, and I think that Michigan sagged a little too far on that penalty kill. So that's 4-0.
Right, but if you leave your spot like that,
mm-hmm.
you give those open shots.
Yeah, and they left their spot.
Right,
it was poor penalty killing.
Right,
and then we go to the third and Michigan gets one back with Adam Winborg, and at that point, it's a nice goal. It's a nice chip in.
It's he had about three whacks.
Yeah,
I mean, and Robson was I think off balance and was on the ice.
It's
and
a discouraging way to lose a shutout, but oh well, it's Minnesota. and that was the game. And I thought that, you know, Robson was very good. You know, there's a chance he's going to go pro. I just saw that.
Is he drafted?
No, but he's a second rated free agent goalie.
Wow.
So that might be, you know, we were discussing about LaFontaine coming in for them. That might be the plan. They might have just known he was going to go pro. He does have a pro game.
And that's like, interesting because
he can definitely hang in the AHL for a few years.
They lose Shirehorn.
Uh-huh.
And then to lose Robson.
Right.
So that would be where LaFontaine would fit in.
Yeah.
That would be interesting if Michigan got four games against eight plus games
against Jack Lawson.
Yeah, I mean, you know, assuming, you know, I don't know.
Right.
But you would think that they'd get at least a few next year.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was pretty much the game. I think the game was mostly the first period. And, you know, the power play goal, I think, was something to talk about because it signified something that was a greater issue.
Right.
You know, when you're talking about the writing on the wall at the very beginning of the podcast, I mean, that's one of the things.
Right.
You can't take penalties.
Mm-hmm.
Especially six, like they did the first game.
Yeah.
But then you definitely can't against a team that has a dominant power play.
Right.
And if your penalty kill is not great, there are obviously reasons why, and this is one of the reasons. I mean, you know, goalie play is always can be improved, and that affects every facet. But you just can't give up the shots that Michigan was giving up consistently on the power play.
Michigan ends the season 1-4 against Minnesota. Does that sound right? 1-4-1 against Minnesota?
Yes. That does sound right. They beat them once.
Mm-hmm. And 0-4 on the power play.
Against Minnesota.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. And they were, what, 0-4 on Friday and 0-4 quintillion in January or something?
Right. I think they got close to 30.
And see, that's the thing is, you know, now we're going to get in the weeds because I'm going to go on a little thing. But, like, if your power play is better at all, you can win some of these games.
Oh, absolutely.
Especially the ones against Minnesota, because those were most of them were 50-50 games.
Mm-hmm. Are we teasing the next segment right now?
We could. I think the thing is, like, I printed out in the notes, I said, mm-hmm. the third section that we were going to talk about for a couple minutes here is, like, what does this mean?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've mentioned this a lot, but, like, Michigan's been able to hang in most of their games. It hasn't been they've gotten rocked. Mm-hmm. It's not because the other team has infinite more talent.
Right.
It's not because the team is infinitely more prepared.
Right.
They've been fine to, you know, 45 to 50%. In as good as whoever they've played,
right.
maybe a little better in some cases, but they've just been so inconsistent.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, what do you do with a team that is just inconsistent?
What do you mean? What do you do?
I mean, how do you become more consistent?
I think that part of the issue, and we hear this a lot in the, you know, some of the daily articles that were written, I think we might have talked about this already, is there's a consistent theme this year with some of the interviews and whatnot where Michigan needing to focus or Michigan needing to give a better effort. And I think that sometimes it can be a leadership thing. Mm-hmm. So a lot of credit was given to Marody and Calderon last year for leadership, and
right.
they carry the team. They had a couple young stars in Norris and Quinn Hughes,
but they also had good players who were older
and a decently older core in some sense. And they were able to capitalize off of that. And I think this year you go to a situation where your best player is younger, you know, is only a sophomore, and looking, there might be a little bit of a leadership void. You have a couple senior defensemen.
Right.
Ciccone's a senior, but
Boca.
Boca's a senior also.
Mm-hmm.
But what it's a little bit of a struggle sometimes. You know, if your best player is inconsistent.
Yep.
I think that can be a bad sign for the team. And I think they might have had a little bit of a struggle this year with, you know, leadership. You saw it in the articles. Like, this is not something that's just made up out of thin air. So I think that might be where some of the inconsistencies come from. I know, I was looking at Levine's stats, and he's dropped, like, 28.28 save percentage over a year. I think he's, like, better technically this year than he was last year.
Hmm.
So what is that? You know, where is the issue? Why is there such a decrease in performance in some of these things? And I just think overall, like, in the, you know, they had this problem in the first half last year as well.
Yeah.
You know, and I think there might be some real chances to gain in maybe having a little bit of a better, a little bit more cohesion, you know, in the future.
Okay.
Maybe what they're going for.
No, that makes sense. The other thing that kind of kept coming to my mind was, like, the total is less
than the sum of the parts. It's not really debatable.
Is what I could see, because it seemed like they played the best when they, with all of the things that they did well, mm-hmm. came from good execution as, like, a team or right. as a play. You didn't really have, aside from maybe a little bit of Hughes, a mm-hmm. little bit of Lockwood here and there, you didn't have a lot of one player who could...
No one's taking over a game.
ISO, right. quote-unquote, and go get you a goal or go take over something.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes in hockey, when you have a goal which has a goalie, mm-hmm. you need someone who can just go beat a goalie.
Right.
And, you know, Lockwood's kind of that. You know, Hughes is that, but it's tougher from a defensive role because by the time you're usually up the ice, there's guys back. Whereas I think forwards, you're generally more in the offensive zone more consistently and you're deeper. I mean, you can't have Quinn Hughes below the goal line all the time.
Right.
Right? Because then someone else is not there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they just didn't really have that guy. I think that Norris was sort of developing into that guy a little bit, but, you know, they didn't have him. And I think that really... You know, we'll talk about this when we rate things, but that really set back sort of that individual skill level.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll come back and we'll talk about another segment where we'll just kind of go through the areas of the team and maybe a little bit of the coaching and see where we go from there.
If you find yourself in the penalty box in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man arguing your case. call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan law grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
Sounds better every time.
Oh man, we just actually replayed it about 3 or 4 times.
Can you just start playing it right now? Like, just play it. We could really just quietly while we go through this.
Just kind of have it like on a sub track.
Yeah.
Where it's just going on underneath.
What is your grade for these?
Grade.
We're gonna do grades or opinions. Do we do hot takes? Like, how do you want to do this?
Well, we thought we'd just kind
of
go through
A, B, C, D, E.
I think ten is too many. Uh-huh. There's too many options. We could stick with like letter grades.
Okay, so you're like, you want to order off the Taco Bell menu instead of look at all the possibilities.
Are you comparing to Taco Bell?
Yeah.
I don't remember the last time I've been to Taco. When was the last time you ate Taco Bell?
Last week.
Wow. All right. I'm trying to remember if I've had Taco Bell this decade.
So the offense.
Yo quiero.
The offense. Now, I thought, and you agree, because this is in your notes.
Yeah.
That they're better than what we expected.
Well, and this goes back.
More capable.
It goes really back to the end of the last segment where they could produce some goals within, when they would execute what they want to do on offense. Like when they want to do stuff in the zone with their type of Corsi that they were trying to control. Right. I thought they could still produce a few goals.
I thought that they were able to take different combinations of lines, and each line was able to produce in a way that their skill set allowed them to. So the Pasta line was chip and chase, get the puck deep, and get it out to Becker in the slot. That was pretty effective for a while. I don't really know why it was broken up. The 90s line was able to do their thing, you know, basically recreate some of the Chris Draper magic, as my friend said.
And now
that's two of your lines being effective. And, you know, the top line with Norris and Slaker, like, they were actually able to do skill plays before that line was broken up with the injury. And so what I was seeing is a level of creativity. I wouldn't say creativity, but an ability to allow different skill sets to play differently to get maximum effectiveness. And I thought that was probably my favorite thing that the staff did this year, is they're able to, you know, cobble together like good, effective line play out of different lines, and it looked different, you know, depending on who was out there. And so, you know, credit to them.
Kind of playing to each individual line's strengths.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that, I think that's where the Norris injury kind of killed them, is it broke up that top line.
Right.
It broke up a line or two below them. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it would have necessarily had to. Mm-hmm. I think you could have still moved other guys around to keep a couple of those the same, but I also see where you would break some up if you wanted to get the best players in certain positions, or, you know, taking faceoffs and that type of thing. But, you know, Michigan didn't get run out of too many games this year, and they found a way to score enough to be in games, and we've been highly critical of their defense, or the consistency of their defense, and the consistency of their goaltending. But if you're still in games, it means you have to be scoring enough goals to be there.
Yeah, I thought the offense was consistently decent. They don't really go super high percentage. You know, a lot of it's floating pucks from the point and get some scraps and at times, and that kind of didn't really work. But when they had their lines clicking at different points in the season, I really thought that, you know, they were able to play to those strengths.
And so, they did a really good job of identifying a few teams' poor defensemen. And using the Moyle, Van Wy, Raby line, but then also like Nick Pasta and Becker too,
for breaking out, like stopping
for like forechecking, forcing DZTOs and getting shots without having to like come all the way down the ice.
Well, that's smart.
Yes. Yeah. And so that was, you know, it's not an A because they didn't, I mean, we've seen A at Michigan and this was not it, but I would say it was a B given the overall talent that it looked like you would think guys would score goals. I would say that it was acceptable, but a little above acceptable, because they averaged over 3 goals a game. It wasn't like they were way down there.
They were shade over 3. And so that's they were 15th nationally in goals. So it's decent.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not, I wouldn't say it's great. I wouldn't say it's bad, but I think a B, you know, B minus.
That sounds like Michigan. Fair.
Yeah.
Right? A is good, B is bad, C is fail. Isn't that what they say at Michigan? Anyway, that's what we used to say when I was in school. Yeah, okay. So defense.
It was pretty disappointing overall, I think. I think some of the, considering the age of the players and the experience level of the players, I don't think it was where they needed it to be this year, especially with the kind of goaltending they had. I think you have to be a little bit more protective of your goalie. You have to be a little bit more risk averse in some instances.
Yes,
you
know, if you're that is key.
We talked about this at times throughout the year. If you're playing an offense where if you're playing defense by owning the puck in the opponent's zone, you can't allow the kind of transition that Michigan allowed in some of those games, and you can't allow the kind of good quality chances that Michigan allowed at a greater rate than than your opponent. Because if your goalie's standing around and he's not facing too many shots, like, he's probably going to let in more than, you know, more than normal.
Right.
And so I just thought that there were way too many instances of poor gap control. I thought, considering that Hughes is probably either the most or second most talented defenseman in the country with a drafted defenseman partner, you know, who had played World Junior Hockey, that should have been the best pair in the nation or close to it. Easily a top five pair, like, not debatable top five pair.
Yeah.
And at no point in the season did you think that they were a top five pair in college hockey. And so to me, that was a little bit of an issue. I thought Boca acquitted himself all right. He rushes the puck and skates really well. And at the end of the day, when you look at his stats, they're not jumping off the page at you. It's really kind of bizarre.
Yeah.
So I thought he could produce a little bit more. I thought Summers and Blankenberg were also pretty good revelations this year. I think Blankenberg struggled mightily in the Minnesota series, but overall, there's definitely some building blocks there.
Like, he didn't have the greatest end of the season.
Right.
The last couple series, I would even say that Wisconsin one was a little
Yeah, you know what? You're probably
iffy.
Right. Now, that might be just maybe, you know, moving up in the lineup a little bit, because now he's facing a little bit tougher assignments. It could be just fatigue. We don't know.
There's a lot of things. I'm not going to like rag on the guy for a couple bad weekends when he has looked like probably the best freshman on the team.
Definitely. Yeah. And then there's Summers, I thought, by the end of the season was pretty decent, especially as a third pair guy.
Yeah, he would early on, I think, made me a little more nervous.
Right.
But as the season progressed, I thought that he also progressed.
Right.
And then he even jumped into the offense and had that kind of nice little goal against Wisconsin last week off that set play.
Yep.
And it's good to see. I mean, you don't need your defenseman to lead you in scoring.
Right.
But you like to see them be able to join a rush and then hit a net and score a goal every once in a while. And that's kind of what he did.
So this is not to disparage Martin, because it sucks to lose a drafted defenseman to injury, but I think that Summers really filled the void admirably.
I agree.
You know? And I, like I said, it's not to disparage Mara.
No.
It's more or less to compliment Summers. I thought it was pretty good. And then Luce, I think Luce has struggled a little bit. I'm not sure what the underlying issues are, but there was a little bit too many turnovers. And, you know, maybe as he gets a little bit older, we might see a little bit of improvement next year. But honestly, as a third pair guy, he's totally fine. And I think that core defenseman they had going into the season, we expected a little bit more. We expected a higher defensive performance, and we just didn't see it. And to me, that was probably the, I would say the thing that was kind of surprising the most at the end of the season, looking back, the defense was not what we thought it would be.
The thing is like, we could see it from time to time, but I think the key word there is consistency, just like it is with the rest of the team.
Yeah.
They would play really well at certain times. Like, I know we always talk about this Notre Dame game, but the first time the Big Ten opener, Michigan hosts Notre Dame.
Was that their best game of the year?
The Penn State game that they hosted was at Yost was high up there, I think.
The Thursday game?
Yeah, that one. Uh-huh. I mean, a couple of their Ohio State games I thought were pretty good, too.
Right. Yeah, one of the Ohio State games was really impressive.
But that Notre Dame game, they were up 2-1, mm-hmm. and they hadn't played great. They were coming off of, or, you know, their non-conference was iffy or up and down. Mm-hmm. And they had 2-1 going into the third, and they just locked Notre Dame down and controlled the puck, kept it in the zone. And Levine, I think it was Mann actually in net, yeah. saw like three shots. Yeah. And that was kind of like, whoa, like I didn't know that they would do this. Mm-hmm. And it was unfortunate because we never really, yeah. we only saw that again from time to time. I think they did it to State once, and they did it to Minnesota mm-hmm. once. But like that was the level that you and I talked about, like, dude, this is how they're successful if they do this.
And that's what they're trying to do. That's Mel's pretty much said that's what their game plan is.
Yeah. But it just wasn't there on a weekend-by-weekend basis, a night-by-night basis. And so the problem is that if you sit there and say, well, how can we have more talent on defense? Mm-hmm. I don't think they can because they had
they probably won't.
One of the best
right.
defensemen that Michigan will see here, probably a top 5, mm-hmm. 10 player, if not defenseman, at Michigan all time.
He's easily one of the 10 most talented players ever to play for Michigan.
Right.
Maybe top 5.
Paired with right. two seniors who have mm-hmm. basically started for 3 years at least.
Right.
Not only started, but gotten consistent minutes, mm-hmm. been on special teams, mm-hmm. and then two solid freshmen, mm-hmm. and then another draft pick in Martin. Mm-hmm. And you also have Griffin Luce, who's a junior. Right. So that's 7 guys that you're like, and that's why you said like...
Those are all guys you can play.
The Martin injury, while it's not a slam on Luke Martin, it's like, well, they still have 6 defensemen right. that you trust on the ice.
Yep.
And... So if you have that situation, your defense should be really good, especially after improving last year and being one of the major reasons they got yeah. to the tournament and got a 2 seed and got to the Frozen Four.
Yep.
So for it to go very mm-hmm. up and down
yep.
was, I don't want to say unacceptable, but mm-hmm. what's really close to unacceptable?
It was a big disappointment, yeah.
Yeah. And so my grade on defense is probably... D?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's being fair.
I don't want to yeah. come down too hard, but like that was very D for disappointing, maybe.
Goaltending. This is a hot-button topic.
There are varying opinions.
Well, I'm a slappy goalie, and I'm going to have my guys back. I think we spent like 10 minutes last week talking about how the play wasn't really great. But overall...
I mean, you've never said it was great all year. You've defended...
It was pretty good this past weekend.
Oh, you know. But I mean, yeah. it from the year in general, there's never times when you were like, goaltending is A+, or A.
Right. But I will say that I thought that Levine had technically improved in some senses this year. Mm-hmm. You didn't see a lot of bad rebounds. You didn't see him fighting the puck.
He went through a great stretch in January and into mm-hmm. February right. where I was like, if they get goaltending like this, they can make that run.
And they had some good games for Mann. I think that, number one, I mean... The expectations are not going to be great, right? It's a freshman coming out of the USHL
yeah.
as a 19-year-old. And a junior goalie who's was essentially won the job, you know, as the starter. But his profile's not high.
Okay.
You know, and so what are your expectations? What are you managing? And I think you have to pair those goalies with a strong defense.
Yep.
And so their play was being a little inconsistent because there were some howlers. Mann letting a couple howlers. Levine's letting a couple bad ones.
Yeah.
Honestly, though, like Levine letting a lot fewer bad goals than he did last year.
I think a lot of the goals that they let in are goals. You even said to me, like, a good goalie makes that save. It's yeah. not like one that, it's not like a ball rolling through your legs.
Well. Right, right.
But it's a better goalie makes that
well,
save.
Well, it's kind of the discussion we had about the Wisconsin goal where it was a really, really bad zone entry and a guy comes in wide and then kicks it to the dot and a guy's there for a one-timer. Now, a goalie on his game is going to stop that. It's a difficult shot. It's a grade A opportunity, but it's still stoppable. Mm-hmm. It's not like a backdoor flailing dive. You know, goalie had no right. chance.
A Hasek save.
Right. But, you know, they're not getting those saves.
Yep.
But if you're building your team success off of, yeah, this guy's not stopping as many grade A chances as we need, you probably need to reevaluate things.
Yep.
And I think that I've seen a lot of teams built that way and kind of not get the kind of goaltending they need despite the fact that they're asking their goalie to make too many big saves and too many difficult saves, especially if you're going to have them standing around while the puck's on the other end the whole time.
Yeah.
It's a bad combination. It's not, there aren't too many goalies that can handle that. And I don't think that, you know, the team was built the right way considering what they had in goal.
Yeah.
Now, it is average to bad in most cases, but
yep.
We also had a discussion where man hadn't let in more than 3 goals in a certain amount of time. You know, like there were good stretches of goaltending that kind of went under the radar. The Penn State game at home, Levine basically stole that first period, you know, and
yep.
This past weekend, man was a better goalie. You know, he played better than Robson, I thought. Mm-hmm. And so there were instances of, you know, getting some good goaltending. It was too inconsistent. If I had to say, it was kind of inconsistent the way we would describe the team, but for different reasons.
Yeah. And, no, I agree. You play goalie, and so and I trust like what you have to say
right.
regarding the position. Uh-huh. I've played enough indoor soccer goalie to right. know some of the basics of where you need to put your defensemen, uh-huh. how you need to play angles and stuff.
Right.
And I don't want to say that I think that Levine or Mann, either one of them, are one of the better goalies I've seen at Michigan, because I
right.
don't necessarily think that's the case. Mm-hmm. But I also don't think it's as bad as sort of a lot of people have been saying. Not even just one or two people, but like you get that from wide array. I think there's definite room for improvement, but I will say that had the defense played up to their potential too,
mm-hmm.
the second half or even the season plays out a lot differently.
Yeah, I think it's a C for me because they performed the way I would expect given what they faced.
That's fair. I wouldn't necessarily disagree.
Yeah, so Mann performed like a freshman out of the USHL,
mm-hmm.
and Levine performed like his profile would say, given the quality of scoring chances they faced. And
when Michigan played good defense, both of those guys played well in the system.
Yeah, they shut the door.
Yep, and that's...
And they didn't steal any games, and you know, if the complaint is... we need goalies to steal games. I would say that your guy with a high ceiling, you should make the starter. And they didn't do that last year. And so this is what they have as a result.
And I want to know just how many great goalies there are, like high-drafted goalies there are in college hockey.
There's not anymore. So
right.
This is just something you're going to have to deal
this
with.
This is just
right,
what
right,
it is.
Right, yeah.
And
I was actually looking like the bulk of high-quality goaltenders came out of the NDP over the last 15 years. And the NDP hasn't really produced a ton of great goalies this decade. Most of those goalies that are coming into the NHL now went the OHL route or were, you know, from different parts of the country. So your Tyler Parsons and your John Gibsons and, you know, like those guys went the OHL route. So they're not coming out of the NDP, and therefore they're not, like, getting into college hockey as much.
And I think that the thing is, you look around the Big Ten, and a couple of the better goalies are who have the good numbers, mm-hmm. like Morris, Romeo last year, not as good this year, Napier this year, who mm-hmm. has kind of overtaken Romeo a little bit for Ohio State. Mm-hmm. But both those guys, they play in really well-structured defensive systems mm-hmm. that tailor to them, I
yes.
think.
Yeah.
And they both play more defensive styles.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to be giving your goalie better opportunities, mm-hmm. and Michigan didn't really do that, and other teams did, and I think that was one of the drivers of why those teams had better not only defenses but goaltending.
Agreed. I think they're kind of handcuffed. You can't have one without the other,
right.
in the way the system is structured,
right.
And it's not going to change. You know, it's just the way it's going to be.
So not the best, not the worst, but not the best. Mm-hmm. Move on to special teams. This is, I think we both know where we're going with this, but the power play, and Jost Bildt talked about something that was kind of interesting where he said that before the Norris injury, Michigan's power play was hovering around 20, which isn't mm-hmm. great, but it's better. And without without him afterwards, it was like at 7%,
mm-hmm.
which is an interesting sort of, you know, midway
right.
point. So their power play was awful, mm-hmm. awful. In the second half, it wasn't great. In the first half, it was mm-hmm. probably borderline acceptable.
Right.
But, and I get that. The problem to me was just the number of power plays that I watched this year where they couldn't really even gain the zone mm-hmm. and then set something up.
Right.
And then there were enough times when, even when they did that, it looked like they didn't have anything to run. So that's just bad.
And they did have a few, and we saw that when they would execute something, they would get goals. We talked about a few times when they got Lockwood open, when they had some cross icers to Lambert or things like that. But it was so inconsistent, and you know, you just have to when you're in the situation Michigan is in, you just have to be good on special teams. And the power play was sometimes almost like, wow, now you're just I was like disappointed, because I'm like, now you're just giving the opponent 2 minutes to ice the puck.
Well, we just talked about Minnesota.
Yeah.
And how they had to survive that way. Notre Dame survives that way.
Yeah.
And you have to accept the fact that if you're not going to be a great 5-on-5 team, mm-hmm. Michigan was a decent 5-on-5 team. Their possession was great, but they didn't generate the kind of scoring chances they needed to. You're going to have to be good on special teams. And, you know, they just weren't. They were, I think, what stat did I just say? It was like 15-something% on the season.
Yeah, it was 15 or 16, yeah.
Right. So that's not really great. That's not really going to get it done. Last year, they were only 18%.
And they had
one of the best lines.
Marody, yeah. And...
So this is not... I know there was a discussion about, oh, the power play is... so much worse now because they don't have quote unquote any talent, but it's only 3% worse this year with so much, you know, with that losing that kind of firepower. I think I think there's a little bit more of an issue than just not having the right guys.
Right. And we talked about that. Just, I mean, they had Quinn Hughes who could gain the zone on a power play almost at will.
The best, probably the best power play defenseman you're ever going to have.
But he was inconsistent doing it for some reasons. Mm-hmm.
It's predictable.
Players would look discombobulated sometimes. Mm-hmm. They couldn't always hold it. They could, you know, it was just very, it seemed there could have been some talent gaps, but it also definitely seemed like the structure was inconsistent.
Mm-hmm.
It just like a lot of other things.
Mm-hmm.
The penalty kill started better. I think they were in the mid 80s at some point, and then it's kind of drop down as the season has gone along. I mean, you could also argue that with the Norris, as he might have been one of the better penalty killers. I know they ended up with a lot of freshmen killing penalties throughout the year. We talked about Raby getting lost and coming across, and that was, I mean, that's one instance, but that wasn't an anomaly where you'd have defensemen that would do that too. I mean, that's happened to Blankberg, also a freshman, but you know, if you're on the power play, you need to do what you're supposed to do on the power play, and if you're not, you're going to give up goals.
They got a couple percentage points better than last year. They were 78.5%.
Which is...
it's about the same amount of gain that, you know, they gained 3% on the power penalty kill and lost 3% on the power play. Like, kind of the same. You know, special teams are kind of the same. And
yeah,
it's not as good as it needs to be. I know the goaltending is called into question on some of that. But, I mean, we can point to issues where guys are getting open. And these aren't like... These aren't howlers from the blue line. They're quality scoring chances
right.
that aren't getting stopped. And I think Michigan needs to clean that up a little bit.
And we're not saying that the goaltending can't get better on special teams either. Mm-hmm. We're just saying that there are other things that can also be fixed.
Right. Like I said, you can't have one without the other. You can't have one without the other.
So, not so great on special teams. I mean, that's got to be also borderline a D.
Yeah.
I mean,
last year was...
With the percentages, you just can't be...
This is an improvement over last year because it was as bad as it could get.
Yeah,
but,
I mean,
yeah, it was.
I just, you know, you
still
can't.
Still not where they need to be for, you know, the conference that they're in and the types of teams they're going to play.
I mean, if you want to make a tournament run, it's very difficult to do that when you're not scoring in the 20s on the power play and you're giving up in the 20s on the penalty kill.
Yeah.
So, if Michigan wants to be above average team, then okay, we can give you a better grade. You want to make consistent tournament runs. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Ohio State last year had a 90% mm-hmm. on the penalty kill.
Yeah,
so they never gave up power play goals,
mm-hmm.
and they because they didn't score a lot, they won a lot of those games.
Right,
and Michigan should be able to find a way to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So the last aspect, and this might be the hot button topic, is the coaching.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to go first? Do you want me to go first?
You can go.
So it's going to be basically a summary of some of the things we talked mm-hmm. about. It's not, I don't think it was a bad job,
mm-hmm.
but there are some things that I think have to come down to coaching, sort of like being more creative on the power play, mm-hmm. being more disciplined on defense,
mm-hmm.
being more structurally sound on the penalty kill, mm-hmm. or getting guys in there to do those things. Mm-hmm. Michigan wasn't, they had a bunch of older defensemen, mm-hmm. so it wasn't just you had to play Blankenberg and Summers all the time. Mm-hmm. They had four or five guys that are going to be a chance to play in the AHL at least. Mm-hmm. That's got to be better. It's right. got to be consistent. Mm-hmm. It's the players know it has to be consistent. Mm-hmm. We've seen the high end of it. Mm-hmm. I don't know that it's necessarily Mel's fault, mm-hmm. but he's got to find a way to get that out of them. Mm-hmm. That's just what, you know, we held Beilein accountable for bad defense. Mm-hmm. We've held Harbaugh accountable for not doing certain things on offense. You know, these are certain things that coaching comes down to and you know, they just were subpar.
Yeah, I think, so the good thing, I'll start with the good.
So I'll talk about the negative things and you'll jump right in.
I was not setting you up. I think overall, it's hard to argue with what you're saying. I think the good thing is, though, they're really able to craft an offense at even strength.
Yes.
You know, I think that's going to be the same way going forward, especially as they kind of start to funnel in more forwards. The forwards they're still bringing in are not superstars, so we're probably going to see more of this kind of offense moving forward the next couple of years at least, and they're going to have to be creative in the ways to score goals, and I think they have that level of creativity amongst their offensive design and the way they enable their players, so I think that's good. Another thing is they're able to win, you know, the neutral zone trap was really effective for a few games. They're able to choke the life out of games when, in some instances, and so I think that capability is there. We saw at that Notre Dame game, as you spoke about in November on that Friday night, where they played the game they wanted to play and won. They beat Notre Dame. It's probably one of the only times this season where they played the game they wanted to play mm-hmm. completely.
Especially against a team of equal talent.
Right. I mean, you can choke the life out of Michigan State, whoop-de-doo. But, like, you know, to go and do that to Notre Dame, I think if that's what they're going for, there's bits and pieces there. But I do think there's some level of improvement in some areas. And I guess where, for me, it's obviously the special teams. We just talked about that. So no need to rehash that. It's the second year. So, and I don't see why things couldn't change on the fly. I don't see why there couldn't be other solutions. And I think that's a little bit troublesome. And I think matching defensive system to the goaltending they have is going to have to become a little bit more paramount as well.
Yep.
So they're going to have to decide how they want to live, you know,
yep.
And I think that will be very important. So those are the two things that were kind of shocking to me with the way the season unfolded. Is we talked about at the beginning of the season, oh, we have this great defense and really not great goalies, so they should match the talent to that, and that's not what happened. So if they're gonna take that approach next year, we're probably gonna see the same thing. Let's be honest. Man might improve a little bit. I think Man's ceiling is decently high, but what's the real ceiling with that kind of thing? And so I'm hoping there might be a little bit of an adjustment or some tweaks here and there. I think some of the development, I think, was really hit and miss for me. Think you saw Moyle move, really embrace the fourth line checking line role and kind of play good out of it. I think the Pasta brothers both kind of played a little bit better than we expected. You know, they showed us some life.
Mikey, for sure.
He can excel in a line without him and without his brother and Becker,
and
which I thought were good.
Nick mm-hmm. did until the Norris injury, when I think that he got bumped up to first line mm-hmm. center,
right.
and that was a different experience for him.
Right, but I think that might go to a different area coaching that we probably should hit at the end. So I thought that was decent. Raby and Garrett Van Wy kind of did what they did.
Right.
You know, I think Lockwood looked a little bit better in some areas. He had that goal scoring streak.
Yep.
There's a couple things. I think they integrated Blankenberg and Summers nicely.
Yes.
I think given where the struggles they had and the way Randall performed and the times that they had him on the ice, you know, he had quite a few shot attempts for where he was slotted in the lineup. And mm-hmm. I think that they might have been able to get a little bit more out of him in a more of a sheltered role instead of a non-existent role.
Yeah.
And he only dressed on a scoring line one time, which was the outdoor game, which is not really a real sample size because it's a weird game anyway.
Yeah, it's not the greatest game to right. judge somebody on.
So in some players, I know the argument is, well, he didn't produce when he was in the lineup. I mean, I think we track the lines every game. He was the extra forward for like half of his appearances, and the other half it's bottom six. And some guys just aren't bottom six players. You're not maybe a third line if you have three scoring lines, but Michigan didn't have three scoring lines.
Right.
So if you're going to enable someone to develop, it's got to be in the environment for which they're suited. And we saw in the USHL how Randall was able to play as a big scoring contributor to his line mates. He had one of the highest percentages for that in the entire, in all of junior hockey. So not just USHL, but CHL as well. And you're not going to really get that out of him on non-scoring lines.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of my beef with that. Like, and I kind of feel like if he's able to get some minutes and line mates that would probably pair better with him, you're going to probably see a pretty good player in the future. That's my prediction. But I think in the situation they were in, especially with Norris going down, to not try playing that card, I think with a real game situation, I think you might be leaving a little bit on the table. It's just my personal opinion. Like I said, on the defensive side, though, I think the way they integrated Summers and Blankenberg was very good. And I think Blankenberg was able to become a pretty good player. And Summers was, you know, like I said, an apt fill-in for when Martin went down. So they got two guys that are going to be able to play 4 years here, which is pretty solid. And I think that was a really big win for them.
I think the interesting thing to me is we were both, and I wrote a lot of this stuff down too, so I know this good cop, bad cop thing is not so great for me right now, but I thought that they did a good job developing players, but the systems took a step back, at least on defense. And so you could see upticks in a lot of guys individually, but the consistency of how a system played on defense, on special teams, something like that, didn't move or went backwards. And that was kind of the interesting thing because, you know, but I will say the other positive, and you said your number one thing that you were excited about was...
Oh, the way they were able to cobble together like any kind of offense.
And
it looked different depending on who was out there.
Right.
It was still effective.
And I agree with that, but that was my number two. Uh-huh. And I know people don't want to hear this, but my number one was the use of the neutral zone trap. Because to be able to go to something like that, especially from what Michigan is used to playing for years and years and what they've built everything on, which is fun. And we like that and we want it to work.
Right.
But if it doesn't work or you don't have the people to run it, I mean, I'd rather see Michigan win than pretty much anything else. So do what's going to help them win. And they brought out kind of this ugly game killer that people kind of have bad memories of. And then they started beating teams that they needed to beat.
Yeah. And it's not fun, but it's boring to watch. And I fell asleep watching it, but I don't care.
But you woke up to a win.
Exactly. I could care less.
So to be able to do that and to be able to implement that and to then use that was... Right. Probably the highlight for me, because it's like, hey, you know what? When it gets down to it, when, you know, wins are on the line, careers are going to end, you know, people are going to demand success.
Right.
All right, we're going to do what we need to do. And if we need to go to this, when we need to go to this, then that's what we need to do. And that to me was about as positive a thing, because when you look at a coaching staff or an organization, you want them to be able to look at everything objectively and say, all right, how can we find a win?
Yeah.
And they went to something that is not so popular and is not heralded, but it got the job done.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think that's a really excellent point.
So, you know, we're critical in a few ways, but there are positives on developing some players, putting some forwards in positions to score based on their strengths, and then being able to pull out a few tactics that... never really seen at Yost in quite some time.
I think we've seen the pathway to success, though, what it's going to look like.
Yeah.
And maybe we can talk about that in the next segment.
If you find yourself in the penalty box in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man arguing your case. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
When it's over, that's the time I fall in love again. And when it's over, that's the time you're in my heart again. And when you go, 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 I know it never ends, never ends. All the things that I used to say, all the words that got in the way, all the things that I used to know have gone out the window.
For our last segment of the season, this is our 10th episode, and we signed on to do 10 episodes. So we're going to add a bonus segment, as we generally do about two, I guess, this second half. But for our final segment, let's just take a quick look at next year. And where do you kind of see this Michigan team heading?
So we were We were a little critical of some of the things that went down with the team this year, but I think that the program that Mel Pearson is building is definitely sustainable for success.
Okay.
So I don't have any doubts about long-term success. And I think that there's a real plan. We saw it in some of those games, and we saw it in his interviews where he was talking about they want to play defense by having the puck in the opponent's zone. And I think with the players that they're bringing in next year that are, you know, the definitive players, I'm not going to talk about potential recruits. Like the 21-year-olds they're bringing in, we know they're bringing in.
Right.
And you can see where this is going from a little bit of a roster construction standpoint and what the team is going to look like and the way it's going to compete in the college hockey, I would say, landscape. And I think that we're not going to see ultimately, even when the program's up and running, we're probably not going to see the mid-90s like high-flying skill. That'll never come back. You might get your occasional Boston University from like 2015, you know, where you had Eichel and, you know, the team they played last year would have been a high-flying team with better coaching.
For like a year as they get a Wunderkind or something.
You know, like Brady Tkachuk and
right.
Clayton Keller and, you know, those Nodak teams are gone too. You know, Nodak yeah. hasn't really put a power team on the ice.
Well, they're not in the tournament either.
Well, nobody's in the tournament. So yeah. I think part of what's happened is as 20 years ago when Michigan was the power that they were, the USHL and the NHL didn't really have that kind of structure for development in the country. And like if you were a young player who was going to be in college, you were basically the development path was a little bit different. Now there's a well-defined development path. And there's leagues where you can stay in until you're 20 years old and come into college hockey as an older player. So a couple things I think have contributed to college hockey's parity is, number one, you can go more places to play. Like I think with the splitting of the Big Ten and the CCHA, like you're seeing the rise of Duluth, for example,
right,
and the rise of Mankato and like some of these other schools, you know, they're taking a little bit from Nodak, taking a little bit from Minnesota.
Yeah, which has hurt Minnesota. Mm-hmm. We've referenced
well,
that.
Well, that's Minnesota's problem is they left the conference that all their fans loved.
Right.
You know, like nobody likes playing Michigan and nobody cares about Penn State.
Yeah.
You know, they want to play the Minnesota schools, they want to play Nodak.
Because in Minnesota, you play in high school, and they all play each other, right. So you yeah. stay around, you go to those colleges, yep. and ever you continue playing each other.
Yep, exactly. And the fans are familiar with that. So I think the creation of the Big Ten has kind of created a little bit more parity in college hockey. You know, Penn State's there. Arizona State is creating a little bit more, you know, parity. There's NHL-caliber players that, you know, have come out of the ECAC recently, and so I think that...
I believe on this podcast we call that the ECAC.
The ECAC, I'm sorry.
Okay.
So there's a little bit more parity, but also the teams that are solely built off of older players are going to be a little bit stronger because there's better junior leagues that are able to develop those players now. So now we saw with Ohio State, they're a really old team. They're one of the oldest teams in the country, and they're one of the most experienced... They're pretty experienced team. So, you know, they have a player who's 25. They have a couple players who are pretty old. You know, and those players are going to be able to hang a lot better than they could 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit of a change. And to counteract that, Michigan's getting a little bit older. They're bringing in 3 20-year-olds last year. I think that's part of, you know, Mel was comfortable with that at Michigan Tech. Like that's the playbook for a small school. And I think he brought some of that here. I think we kind of kidded ourselves when we thought that wasn't going to happen early on, you know, when he got hired, but it's clearly happening and it's probably going to continue because there's a comfort level there. But also, you know, I think that the team's going to get a little bit older. It's going to be a little bit less skilled.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there is a pathway to success if you look at the way the rest of the Big Ten's gone. So,
yeah.
You know, and honestly, like, it's going to come down to some of the margins we talked about. You know, the power play, a little bit of goaltending, a little bit of better 5-on-5 shooting. And as the program's being built, you know, will they be able to do it? They got really close last year. They got to the Frozen Four. So there's no reason to believe they couldn't do it again if they catch the right, you know, combination and whatnot. So I think that's a pretty good... you know, looking to the future. So
we've talked about this team being one of the least talented Michigan teams just in terms of, like, skill.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the players are younger, so some of them might develop, uh-huh. but and that may not be completely fair. But just from this team as a snapshot, comparatively to previous seasons,
right.
but they were still, like, 50-50 with everyone else that they played on their schedule. Well, it's not like this, like, drop for Michigan mm-hmm. means they're way behind everybody else in terms of skill level mm-hmm. because the skill level overall seems to be dropping
yes.
in college hockey.
Mm-hmm. I think because of the parity.
Right.
I mean, college hockey wasn't really that strong this year. If you look at the teams that are left out of the tournament, your traditional powers.
And you didn't have a lot of guys going nuts scoring a ton of points.
Right. You know, and so your highest scoring team's probably going to miss the tournament or come very close to it.
Yeah,
your big firepower teams. You're not. It's not what we are used to.
I mean, what blue bloods are in the tournament right now?
Are there any?
I mean, do you count Denver? Denver,
yeah.
And Duluth is probably pushing that, right, if you count the last decade.
Denver's becoming a power.
And after that, it's kind of like Clarkson.
Right.
Northeastern.
Yeah. I mean,
like,
yeah,
those are, yeah, like, you know, BU and BC. Minnesota's probably on the edge. Notre Dame's right, probably going to win their way in, or barely make it in. One of those teams, right, is probably going to make it. Mm-hmm. So you're looking at that situation, mm-hmm, and this isn't a Michigan-only problem. Like, didn't BC hadn't won a non-conference game, yeah, in 2 years?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. This is a team, right, that Michigan used to look up to and be
one
like...
One of the only teams that they did.
Right, and there, right, weren't many, but we used to look on the schedule and see them in the tournament. And I remember going to St. Louis when they went on their Final Four run, mm-hmm, and rooting super hard for Colorado College because I was like, Michigan's got a chance. I don't need to see BC.
Right.
And Colorado College ran them out of the building, mm-hmm, and Michigan ended up in the Frozen Four. But
well, that goes to the second point. So you don't really have to be great. You have to get into the tournament.
Yes.
And because it's a four-game single elimination, yes, and you're playing these games in empty stadiums, there's no home ice advantage for the most part. Like, it's just basically roll the puck out there and play, and that's as good of an – I mean, that's as good of an equalizer as there's ever going to be.
And we've talked about what we think it should be, uh-huh, and I write a piece every year about this is what it could be if you incorporate home ice and you, right, do series and all that stuff, and I'll probably still do that, but – for right now, this is what it is. This is what it's been.
I didn't really want to. I thought about having a segment on college hockey being like the least fan friendly and like worst overall spectator sport, but I didn't really want to.
Yeah,
I mean, that's not. I mean, it's not really arguable. So,
and it's not really what we're here for.
Right.
So,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not going to change. So, but I think that given all those things, Michigan will be able to compete. It's going to look like it. It's not going to look like it used to. I think people who think that the program of the 90s and, you know, mid 2000s is coming back, I think are sorely mistaken. The sport has changed way too much since then, and I don't think we'll ever see something like that unless the sport fundamentally changes again.
And yeah, it would take another change, and that's not a Michigan only thing.
No,
that's
not a Michigan
just
thing.
A college hockey thing.
I think it's
for better or for worse.
I think it's more or less a managing expectations type thing. But I the one thing I don't want Michigan to do is chase that. Because they're not going to get it. It's just not the way it is.
Kind of like chasing a pro-style offense in college football.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. And those have been some of the things. You know, we talked about how there's no one of long tradition in the tournament. There's the scoring is not what it was. Mm-hmm. The individual skill seems to not... You don't have those dazzling players across the board that you kind of used to. Mm-hmm. And this is just kind of the new reality.
Definitely.
Which doesn't necessarily always have to be a bad thing, but it's what it is. And Michigan, and here's the uptick, is that Michigan has a bunch of players on their roster now that we've just talked about how they've individually starting to grow. Mm-hmm. Mike Pasta, Lambert, mm-hmm, the Raby Van Wy Moyle, mm-hmm, line, guys like that,
right,
that aren't probably leaving,
right,
unless, you know, something bad happens. Uh-huh. So they're going to be here for a few years. Right. So if those progressions continue, which we've seen Mel be able to develop guys like that, mm-hmm, then in a couple of years, they're going to be at that level that some of these other Quinnipiacs, mm-hmm, Clarkson has been doing for a while, Minnesota State. Mm-hmm. So they're going to have those guys.
Right.
So they're going to be, they're not going to have the high draft pick talent, but they're going to have the, hey, I've played 4 years and I've gotten better every year talent.
Yeah.
And that'll put them in position to succeed.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree 100%. And I think that's what we have to kind of expect. I'm not expecting big recruiting classes. I don't expect any recruiting because it's so transparent. It's so opaque and...
Not transparent.
Right. It's so not transparent. And you don't know what's happening. I look at the recruiting class in like mid-September when the roster gets posted.
Yeah.
And doing otherwise is, I think, just kind of an exercise in futility. Like, you know, we know the 21-year-olds are coming in.
Right.
But other than that, we don't. And... actually, we don't even know the 21-year-olds are coming in because that guy from Ohio State signed a letter of intent with Michigan a few years ago.
Yeah, I don't really know
so, like,
the story
we
of that.
We don't really know. I'll see when the roster comes out, but we know what the trends are.
We know
they're going older. We know they're going Western Canada. I think there's a few reasons why, and I think that as time goes on, the roster is going to be a little bit older. Probably not as high end as Michigan's used to experiencing in terms of talent. Like, I don't think they're going to have 11, 12 draft picks ever again, you know, in that sense.
Yeah, I mean.
Or, you know, on the regular, because it was pretty much a regular thing. but there's a pathway to success with that. So I wouldn't see the overall, you know, depression and talent level as a as an indicator that they can't compete, because I think that to win in college hockey anymore, you don't really necessarily need that.
Right.
And I guess I want to go back to one last thing.
All right.
We thought the talent level was going to be low going into the season. And after I watched all, you know, these games and saw some other teams play and whatnot, like, I don't really think Michigan's talent level was necessarily really low compared to others.
Well, I think that we're used to comparing it to Michigan teams.
Right.
And so it is low compared to, like, the CCM line and the Porter Kolarik year and even some of those, like, Hagelin senior year with Chris Brown and Trieste and all those guys that, you know, you're used to Guptill. You know, those guys that, you – a lot of players on the top two lines are drafted. And we're just not seeing that. Or can walk right in as a freshman, play in a top six forward spot, and score 20 goals.
And you see the development as a season.
Was there, were there 10, 20 goal scorers in college hockey this year? I don't even know if there were.
Right. Yeah.
So it's just not like that anymore.
I don't think it's that kind of sport anymore.
And it's very, I mean, it's, I can see why you compare this Michigan team to previous Michigan teams. I just don't think that that's the right comparison to make, where you need to compare this Michigan team to this Minnesota team, to this Denver team, to this Boston College team. Those are the comparisons that need to be made. And if the overall talent is just dropping, you know, that's just what it is.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. So,
and you talked about the development of other leagues.
Right.
Well, if the, if other leagues developed, it's more options. It's like watching European football, where not everyone plays in EPL.
Right.
You play in the Bundesliga. You play Serie A. You play in Spain or wherever. So, you know, it's just not always compressed the way that it used to be.
I have opinions. I mean, I think college hockey could get back to where it used to be in terms of, like, a lot of high-flying, a lot of power schools. That's going to be legislative changes. I think the cat's already out of the bag on those kind of things. So they can't go back to, like, power schools being, like, really, really powerful anymore, just because if you're going to allow overagers to start at age 21 season without any kind of penalty, like, that should be a, you know, I think the Big Ten proposed if you came in at 21, you're a junior, right? If you're going to allow that, your power teams are just not going to exist in the same capacity anymore, I don't think.
So what needs to happen for that to happen is what you're saying is, like, legislative changes.
Yeah.
So if that happens
unless legislative
NCAA-wide,
right,
then...
And Michigan tried.
Yeah.
You know, and they caught, they actually caught some heat from it at the time. But, you know, honestly, looking back, I'm glad they tried, because I don't like the way this... I don't like the direction the sport's gone. You know, and I think that they were kind of out in front on it, like, understanding that's where it was. I mean, it played to their advantage for 21-year-old freshmen to not be allowed. But no other college sport's really like this. This is kind of a dumb loophole, to be honest.
It is a little weird. You don't see that in
And Brian was right. Like, you don't want to be producing student-athletes who are graduating at 25 and starting their careers at 25.
Because that's just not good for them as humans.
It's a disadvantage.
Yeah.
I mean, who is to say what's good and bad? But, like,
that's
you don't...
True.
You're an institution of higher learning. If education's first, you're not. You shouldn't be producing students at 25 unless they're doctors. And I don't think Dakota Joshua was a doctor, right?
Well, I mean, I don't know him, but that's probably a fairly safe guess,
right?
So,
I want to say this is it for me. I really enjoyed it this season, David, and you know, we've been friends for quite a while, and I couldn't have asked for a better partner and a better learning experience. I do want to thank Brian for allowing me to allowing you and I to kind of do this together with a lot of strings attached. Basically, you know, do what you want to do. And that was fun. Seth for supporting this, and Seth for working hard for us. TJ Garski at the university, the SID for, you know, allowing me to sit in the press box and, you know, kind of be a member of the media this year and understand that side of it. And I think that I learned a lot from the sport to do that. The Michigan staff who I've interacted with and met, we're all really great people. So I want to say that. And I think, you know, overall, we've tried to be straight with the season. We've tried to be very fair. And I think that, you know, they're people that deserve a lot of praise. And, you know, they're pretty good people back there. So, I mean, overall, it's been a really positive experience. But, you know, honestly, it's one of my favorite hockey seasons, even though it didn't end well. Just being able to do this with you and kind of do this. The worst thing is hearing my own voice, though, when I listen to these.
It took me a while. I had to learn to adjust that. And I feel like the only way to really get better is to, you have to listen to what you say, and then that'll motivate you not to. But I don't disagree with anything you said. I appreciate it as well. Like you said, we've been friends, but we've been colleagues. And I feel like you've taught me the majority of what I know. And that has helped me learn not only hockey, but how to look at sports differently, how to look at things from different angles. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that from you. Thank you for being on. I'll still probably bug you in the future about coming by
yeah,
and
whatever
and doing stuff. But this was really good. I think it was good for our blog. I think it was good for us. I think it was good all around. And we look forward to figuring something else out in the future.
This has been MGO HockeyCast 1.10 and thus concludes the season. It has been me, Anthony Ciotti, with David Nasternak, and thank you all very much. It's been a great time.